After talking to you about all those employees who were essential to the club operation, we're gonna talk about those who benefited from it. The famous sports, as the guide would call them. That's the nickname that the local gave to the club member. It took its origin from the fact that the member hunted for sports, contrary to the native who were hunting as part of their lifestyle. The clash of culture brought a big lack of understanding from the Abenaki guide. Flaunting antlers around, rather than giving the attention to the hunted meat, it made absolutely no sense to them. So they decided to invent a little dance, the caribou dance. It was meant to, well, pretty much laugh at the sports. Surely, for our sports, bringing back a trophy that they could mount on the wall represented something ceremonious, refined, hedonistic. It reminded them of the nobility of yore. It must be said that the club members were most definitely wealthy. If you look through the clients list, you'll see politician, banker, industrial tycoon, even some English noble. It's a small group of rich and privileged people who love to be in the wild and escape from the city. It all started in a modest way, about 50 members, and throughout the years we go all the way up to 300 active member. Yearly fee was 135. Just to give you an idea, in today's money, that's about 2,000. It was a good amount of money at the time. That's what allowed the house to have all the possible luxury and comfort. They weren't missing anything. We've been able to recreate the particular atmosphere which the higher-end people, full pouches, surrounded themselves. We've been using the term sports since the beginning, but let's face it, it was a bit of a slander. The official moniker given to the member was Sir. Those sir were accompanied by their ladies. It must be said that none of the women were officially member of the club's client list. They were able to come as guests only. But if you do a little bit of research, you'll find some great nugget. At the end of the hunting season, you could read different articles in various New England newspapers about achievement from the local bourgeoisie. You'll find, among others, in 1903, an article about the best marksperson who officially killed a bear and an elk all by themselves. Well, the word here, officially, is really important. As there were quota already meet, the article implied that this person might have killed another elk, which was attributed to another hunter. Thus, we'd like to officially congratulate Miss Stewart of New York, who beat all those men at the game of hunting during the autumn of 1903. Aside from hunting achievement, there were other ways to leave one's trace at the club. Some have been allowed to build their own private hunting cabin on the club land. That wasn't a privilege granted to everyone, that's for sure. We're thinking here, among others, of Mr. Roberts, owner of the Pennsylvania Railroad track. Just imagine, when he came to the Laurentian, he came aboard his own train car, brought his own doctor, cook, servant with him. I'm thinking, yeah, nothing's too good for the working class, right? I'm talking about Mr. Roberts Erdvin, who had the privilege to come and stay in Morrissey. A famous couple that had their own cabin too was Mr. and Mrs. Clark, from the famous Clark's Bean Can. They were a regular client at the club, mainly from 1930 to 1960. As they were not railroad owners, they did not have their own train car, but they still wanted to arrive with a certain class. So they took their own hydroplane to arrive straight at Lac des Cinq. No need for road clearance, strolling through the wood and scratching your head about carrying your luggage when you land directly on your own lake. After a while, all the guides without exception knew them. Cause when they went hunting or fishing, their beans also came with them. It was pretty much a staple on the guys' menu once they got a bit further from the base camp. And let me tell you that Miss Clark was renowned for being quite a character. Imagine, she financed the fish stocking of various lakes. But as it was a bit too far for travel, the fish traveled by plane. Nothing less. Apart from that, we could also talk about some of her, let's say, peculiar belief. I don't know if you knew that, but apparently eating bread crust is great for your head. To the point where the lady would ask the guide to keep some for her. I don't want to start any rumor here, but it seems like the trend of cutting the crust of sandwich was started right here at the Laurentian Club, just so Miss Clark could have it more. After her husband passed away, when she went canoeing on the lake, she always asked the guide to attach a second empty canoe behind just so her husband's soul could accompany her. On another note, their cabin at the Lac des Saints is one of the few that was preserved by Parks Canada. In fact, it's still used to this day by employee who needs to go into the backcountry for a couple of days. Now, for a family that is hard to pass by, the Kennedy, you know, as in John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 35th President of the United States. His parents were regular to the club. From 1920 to 1930, they came so often that they had their own canoe and their own horse with their own name engraved on them. One for Mr. and one for the Mrs. As a matter of fact, Mrs. Kennedy was above all a fishing enthusiast. A little anecdote that will put a smile on your face is the time that Miss Kennedy hadn't gone fishing for 3 days straight. On the fourth, she decided to go with her guide and make up for the lost time. That was the right call, as the fish were biting that day. The quota was 20 trouts a day, and she had determined that she had 80 trout quota. Of course, her guide told her it didn't really work that way, but nothing could be said. She brought back 80 trout to the cabin. Mr. Kennedy, who was pretty much by the book, wasn't going to let her get away with it. Imagine Miss Kennedy arriving to the cabin so happy after her miraculous fishing day, and her husband, not only does he not congratulate her, but instead he scolded her, and wait for it, he reported her to the direction. Result, $100 ticket for the lady. Miss Kennedy was also renowned for her eccentricity. In her case, it was mostly for her clothing choice. Imagine her wearing thick pants under her skirt. Not comfy leggings, mind you. No. We're talking here about big pants made of solid fabric. And for her head, a big round hatch that she used to hang her baits on. Who needs a fishing case? She had everything right there. She also had her favorite guide, François Garceau. On his birthday, Christmas, and Easter, she would send them a gift, $5. And she also brought new clothing for his cousin, Freddy, each time she came and stayed at the club. Both Kennedy had quite a reputation among the guide. They were not that demanding, always left a good tip in US dollar, new clothing, and if anyone got sick during their stay, it's been told that they would be attended by their doctor. Client like that? Oh yes, please, anytime. Let's remember a few of them. Mr. and Mrs. Clark, owner of the Clark Canned Beans. Mr. Cleveland, doctor. The Goss brother, industrial tycoon from Waterbury, Connecticut. The Hamilton brothers, bankers. The Kennedy, businessman and influential American political figure. Mr. Mars, candy maker. R.G. Beaumont, CEO of the Shawinigan Water and Power Company. Mr. Robert, owner of a railroad in Pennsylvania. And Mr. Sharp, lawyer.